Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Lots to talk about today, but on your mind, I suppose, principally will be next weekend, which is Kilconomics weekend.
It is indeed. It is indeed. It's a festival you have been to yourself on a number of occasions, Pat. It is the bizarre combination that works extremely well of comedy and economics. And the idea which we came up with 15 years ago now, Pat, everybody said, well, that can't work. You know, economists on stage with comedians. What's the logic here?
And the logic now is, David, that the economy of the world is being run by comedians.
Well, actually, yes, it is being run by clowns, comedians, whatever you want to talk. Well, there's one clown. There are many quite serious people, but the idea is that, you know, if you inject a little bit of humor, Pat, a little bit of levity, unusual angles, a little bit less reverence and severity into economics, it shed light on all sorts of issues. And we've been going a long time. It's now actually the largest economics festival in the world by number of guests and by number of ticket sales, which is kind of phenomenal given that it's down in Kilkenny. It's not in New York, it's not in London, and it's going on from Friday next to Sunday next. Tickets at kilconomics.com. We're covering everything. We're going to have a long chat here, Pat. Like, we're covering everything from AI to crypto to the American economy to the Irish economy to what happens with unification. All sorts of issues. We've got 70 events over 3 days.
Now, you could say that, you know, economists differ and economies therefore die. But by and large, economists have a set of rules that they live by. And I would put it to you that, you know, all your discussions will center really, no matter what issue you're talking about, whether it's crypto or Ireland after reunification, it all boils down to one word. And that word is Trump. Because all the rules have been thrown.
He looms large.
All the rules have been thrown away. So, you know, for anyone doing standard classical economic analysis, you've got to then factor in the unpredictability that is Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, that is the whole thing. I mean, Trump puts the irrationality into irrationality. And I have always maintained that one of the major problems with economics as a science, as a pursuit, as a social science, is it starts with the fallacious assumption that man is rational, and as a result of that, logical, predictable, fairly forecastable, etc. I've always felt that the economy has never been run by rationality. And as a result of that, Trump, in a way, is emblematic of the madness that can happen. And as you say, he's unpredictable, but, and I think it's important to stand back, is that the politics that Trump is offering the United States is a politic which is incredibly popular all over the world. And this is what I think, this is why I think this year is so important, is that it seems to me that the world is kind of shifting tectonically, that we're going from one maybe era into a different era, Pat, as the economy does. Economies tend to change slowly, but not just economics, Pat. You know, what I would call ideology, sociology, culture, economics, they all tend to change together. And what you sometimes see is these fraction points. Like, I'll give you one example. 1990 would have been one of those years, Pat, where kind of everything changed. All politics changed, the Cold War changed, ideology changed, etc. I think 2025, 2026, the year we're going to, is as momentous as 1990, because we're shifting from Pax Americana, which was predictable, which was global, and where Ireland knew where it stood, into a very new world. And that's what we're trying to capture in Kilconomics, is always like, have we got the big things right? And the little things can look after themselves. But you're absolutely right. I think the world of economics has been thrown in its head by Donald Trump.
A little bit of pushback. For example, the election result in the Netherlands in the last couple of days has indicated that it's not going all the far right's way. And it looks like the center ground will hold there. So there will be, I mean, if there's a general trend to go to the right, there will be those who will, including in this country, push against it.
You're absolutely right. But I mean, as you and I know, we've been both following this game for a long, long time. Stuff is rarely linear and smooth. So what you get is movements towards, we call it populism, the popular right, whatever we decide is the appropriate term. Because I think one of the funniest things when someone like Trump emerges is the language that you're using previously actually is not up to describing the new phenomenon. So I think what we saw in the Netherlands the other night, of course, Wilders was a particularly extreme version, characterized more by Islamophobia than anything else, it seems to me. That was his particular Trump card. But in general, as we look around, whether it's you look to reform in the UK, you look to Le Pen's new renamed National Front, the AFD, Meloni, we know the story. These politicians are representing the anxiety of the people in a way that seems to be more resonant with the people. And Trump, of course, is leading that charge. And on the issue of trade, which I think is probably fair to say, Pat, the dog in the fight that we in Ireland have in the international arena, Trump, as we saw yesterday, there was tariffs against China. Now there's a deal, but the deal is only for a year. We wait and see. And the thing about Donald Trump is that he is so erratic, he's so unpredictable, that the only possible way to deal with him is never, ever, ever to put your cards on the table, particularly as small countries, Pat, are rule takers. We're never rule makers, and Ireland's never a rule maker. So you've got to box clever all the time.
Now, the other element of all of this is that China has obviously learned a lot of lessons from Trump first term and now Trump in the second term and his erratic behavior. And they will deem themselves well pleased with the deal that, even though it's only for a year, but it also gives them more prominence, more significance in the world order than they already had, because they were building that for the last couple of decades. But it looks like they will become the most important world power. They're offering more than just cheap products. They're offering stability. They're offering technical expertise. They're offering a huge market for those who can crack it.
You're absolutely right. Look, we should stand back and say, look, self-confident countries do not impose tariffs. Tariffs are a sign of insecurity, because by doing tariffs, what you're basically saying is we're not good enough under the present rules to compete with our major superpower who is emerging in the East, which is China. So that's the first thing. So Trump is not a man who feels secure about the economy upon which he sits. That's the first thing, because Trump is issuing tariffs, and tariffs are for the insecure. Second thing is that China has been playing the game in the developing world for a long time. I think it was Larry Summers, the American economist, said something very interesting. He recaptured it. He said, when developing countries talk to China, they get a bridge. When they talk to America, they get a lecture. Now, that encapsulates exactly what China's doing. It's basically saying, look, we're not here to tell you how to run your country, but we are here to tell you, if you have an iron ore deposit that we want in the long term, that long term could be 30, 40, 50 years, we are going to put together the infrastructure to allow you to get that out of the ground. Now, that is a completely different philosophy to the IMF, World Bank philosophy, which certainly in the 1980s, after all the corruption of the 1970s, the IMF came and the World Bank came to the developing countries more or less like a bossy school teacher, rather than the plumber that you actually need when your plumbing's broken, and the Chinese came as plumbers. So it's quite different. And as you said, As you say,
hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpoints.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
But this is the rising power, and the power has risen.
Now, it brings me to another topic, which we covered on the program yesterday. This was the big ad for Irish building workers to, having built Sydney, now come home and build at home, and the attractions of the Australian economy for many Irish workers. And you mentioned iron ore. Well, Australian iron ore is a huge exporter to China, as it turns out. And you've also been remarking, podcasting and writing about how Asian a country Australia is, even though after the Aboriginal people, you know, the big population injection came from Europe. But now there's a population injection also coming from Asian countries. The other intriguing thing is no recession in Australia for 40 years.
I know, it's extraordinary. So the reason I was writing about Australia, I've just done a 3-week book tour of Australia for my book, Money, A Story of Humanity, which the Aussies are buying in great numbers, which is fantastic. And I went, of course, to do these tours, to do these public engagements, public speeches. And that gives you a sense, when you're doing three weeks, you kind of get around to the major cities, etc. A, it gives you a sense of what's going on in Australia, but it also gives you a sense of just how many Irish people are out there. Because, you know, you're doing an event in Sydney or Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne, and half the people in front of you are Irish people under the age of 40. So that was one thing, of course, that we all know about. We can talk about that in a second. No, what you find, particularly in Sydney or even in Auckland in New Zealand, where I also did a couple of nights, is these are countries that are now firmly in Asia. So the brief history of Australia is Aboriginals there for 40,000 years, maybe 60,000 years. Then the English arrive the late 19th century. It's English and Irish in effect up until 1950, where the major immigrants, they had a pretty contemptuous British white only policy for a long, long time. Then you have a massive influx of Greeks, Croats, Serbs, Italians, and Portuguese. Brings the population up to about 20 million up until about 1990. And since then, what we are seeing is the population has gone to 8 million, one third of all Australians are born overseas. And they have a target of 40 million. And those people will clearly come from Asia.
Now,
and
it's
so
interesting,
you do get that sense that not only is...
David, I was in Brisbane earlier this year. I went from Sydney via lots of other places to Brisbane. A heck of a long drive, even though it's only an inch on the map, but it's a huge country. But the stat I was looking at for Brisbane was, I think 10% of the population was supposed to be of Asian extraction. On the street, I would say 70-80% of the faces you see are Asian faces.
Yeah, I agree with you. So it's a demographic issue, of course. Brisbane, again, closer to Asia. You know, it's obviously the north of the Gold Coast there in Australia. But the most important thing is that Australia discovered around the 1990s that it wasn't just a hot version of Lancashire or Surrey. It was actually a continent, an island continent.
I think
in Asia, its major trading powers are going to be the Chinese, and its major trading links are going to be with Asia.
You'd wonder, though, it's a big, empty country. Now, admittedly, the centre of it is not that habitable. The Aboriginal peoples knew their way around and knew how to survive in those inhospitable conditions, and there's only so much that air conditioning can do. And if you have no rain, you're in trouble. Then you can have too much rain on the coasts. I mean, that's just the way it is. But it's a big empty country. And given the population of China, you wonder, long term, would they cast their eyes on having some of Australia? Thank you very much.
Oh, completely. Completely. Look, the statistics are very, very extraordinary. Australia, it's about the same land mass as the United States of America. It has a population of Holland and Belgium combined, that's all. And all Australians live in 2% of the land mass. That gives you a sense of how empty it is. The Chinese won't have to actually occupy Australia. They just have to be the major and last buyer and the buyer of last resort for all Australian things, which they are at the moment. But you are absolutely right. There is a population pressure building in Asia, which we describe as the 2 billion Asians who have gotten rich in the last 25 years. India to the north, China to the northeast of Australia. And of course, the massive country that is Indonesia between them. All these countries are going to have a significant charge over Australia, which is why, Pat, Australia is cozying up with the United States. The Australians have been here before. They were nearly invaded by the Japanese in 1941. The British abandoned them in 1941 because the British wanted to keep Singapore and India. And they thought, well, you know what? Australia is just a big sheep farm. It wasn't until the Americans beat the Japanese in the Battle of the Midway that the Australians realized our big mate, no matter who it is the United States, which is why the Australians have joined every single war the Americans have prosecuted since 1945. So the geopolitics of America is definitely, as you pointed out, looking, or geopolitics of Australia is definitely, as you pointed out, looking not over his shoulder, but directly at Asia as both a friend and a potential foe.
Now, the reason Irish are there, I mean, you met many of them on your book tour. So explain to me the attractions of Australia, because I know renting in Sydney is not cheap. Many people are completely priced out of ever buying a house. Besides the great weather and the fact that they tend to finish work maybe 4 o'clock, up early, yeah. Do their, you know, swim on the beach, then go to work, have a leisurely lunch, then off they go at 4 o'clock to the beach again or whatever. It's a nice lifestyle. But besides that, I mean,
well, it's interesting you point that out. I mean, there is, so basically the Irish population in Australia has doubled. So in 2004, there were 55,000 Irish born people living in Australia. Today, there's 103,000. So the Irish population has doubled in 20 years. It's doubled as we got rich, Pat, ironically, more and more Irish people went to Australia. The question is why? I think you've cited everything there. It's the good weather. It's the energetic lifestyle. There's a buzz there. There's a buzz. But the downside of Australia, and there are plenty of jobs for people who want to get them. The downside of Australia, it's an incredibly expensive country to live in. And the housing market is even more dysfunctional than ours. And by that, I mean the housing market is even more expensive to buy. To rent is slightly cheaper, but to buy in the major cities, you've mentioned Brisbane, Pat. Brisbane used to be a laggard because it's going to have the Olympics in a couple of years' time. Brisbane is now almost as expensive as Sydney. Melbourne, slightly cheaper, but we're all talking, you know, fractions relative to other countries. And I think one of the major reasons that a lot of Irish people, young Irish people, don't stay. So, for example, another statistic is 10,500 Irish people went there last year. 6,500 Irish people came back. I would call this immigration almost a boomerang emigration. So people are coming back. And I think the major reason they're coming back is because the housing market in Australia is as prohibitive for young people as it is here. And again, this brings us to the subject of why is the housing market all over the English-speaking world so dysfunctional? It's the same for Canada. It's the same for parts of America. It's certainly the same for New Zealand, and as we know, it's the same for here and large parts of Britain. So that is still the thing that the Aussies, it's the nut the Aussies haven't cracked. But again, and this I suppose accords something with here, if you think about another statistic is that close to 70% of Australians own their own home. This is a massive, like here in Ireland, Pat, this is a massive political constituency. who do not want any government policies that are bringing down house prices, because so much of their wealth is tied up in house prices. An argument that we understand here and we have heard here. And the one last point is something unusual, Pat, is because they have mandatory election. So everyone has to vote. So nobody cannot vote, right? It means that the votes, the elections, as the elections are fought in the center, because when everyone votes, there's simply not enough votes on the extreme left and the extreme right to move the needle. So everybody fights for the center. And as you and I know, the center is where status quo is. And if everyone's fighting for the status quo, you don't get massive shifts on housing, our immigration, and our defense. But on the issue of immigration, the link is being made everywhere in Australia between the immigration since COVID, which has accelerated dramatically. They used to get about 250,000 people per year coming. They're now getting 500,000 to 600,000. That is seriously significantly pushing up wages or pushing up rents at the lower end.
Supply and demand. And
that's the conversation everyone's having. You know, so if you go to a bar in Australia and you chat, and somebody chats you, oh, you're from Ireland, blah, blah, blah. What's the story here? They say, well, look, everything's going well except for the housing market. And frankly, one of the problems in the housing market is A, we're not building enough, but B, we're not building enough because there's so much to build because of all the new arrivals.
Well, finally, David, I want to ask you about a domestic matter which harks back to everything you've been writing and saying about the crash and the remnants of the crash, which is the sale of PTSB. And according to the various newspaper accounts, we could be losing anywhere between 300 and 400 million on the transaction. So what's going on?
Look, Pat, PTSB went bust in 2005, not in 2009 or 2010, when its accounts and share price collapsed. You and I spoke of this. We're so old, the pair of us, we can remember having conversations when PTSB was actually profitable, right? Mm-hmm. So basically what happened is that all the Irish banking systems went bust between 2000 and 2005. And why is that? Because they blew their balance sheets and they chased the property market. So by the time the crash happened, they were already bust. It was just a matter of revealing how bust they were. It is interesting that 20 years later, as you've just pointed out, we are now going through the last of the banking crisis, the housing bank crisis, with the sale of PTSB. I don't know much about the entrails of the bank. I do know from what I'm reading that it has still got a very high cost base. And by that, I mean there's a lot more people working in PTSB than there are relative to income on AIB or Bank of Ireland.
And the funny thing is that part of their marketing is when you come in to us to talk, you know, we have branches and we have people. So
yes,
the very thing that's costing the money is one of the things that they advertise. And
it's one of the things that people like, Pat, because I have so many people that I know are so fed up with, you know, being put on hold, you're waiting. There's, yes, we value your custom. There still are hundreds of thousands of Irish people who like to walk into a bank, particularly of a certain generation, see a face they know, and say, look, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that. And PTSB played that role, as you said, for many, many people. Once you get a new owner in who is not as wedded to the anxiety, let's say, of the customer, what you're going to get is a significant reduction in the amount of those people who are there in PTSB saying, hi, Mr. Kenny, hi, Mr. McWilliams, Mrs. McWilliams, how are you doing, etc. And again, PTSB, probably a laggard in the way in which banks have been going, which has become, I think the buzzword is automation. Now, think about what AI is going to do to banking automation if you think it's remote now. AI is going to make banks unbelievably remote.
Dear, oh dear. You won't be kept waiting. You'll just be talking to a machine instead of a person.
Exactly.
David, we have to leave it there. Best of luck with Kilconomics next weekend. I'm sure it's going to be a massive success. And of course, Kilkenny's a wonderful place. So a great weekend for all who participate and those who buy their tickets and enjoy all the chat and the comedy. David McWilliams, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.